My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It is 800. It is 941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. I'm telling everybody that ever wants to listen, you all ought to be angered. You all ought to be outraged. You all ought to be concerned about the way things are working in America. The things that I have been telling you now and we have been breaking with our ensemble cast of, you know, the Greg Jarretts, you know all the names. By the way, we have a big story that's going to break tonight. Really, really big. Let's put it this way. We have smoking gun evidence tonight that is really important as it relates to FISA and those that committed a fraud on the FISA court. And we're going to name names, and we've got the evidence. And so tune in, 9 Eastern. We'll break it on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. What happened yesterday, as we get the sentencing recommendation from Robert Mueller, it's been a full year now that General Flynn has been literally sitting on a bubble. And, you know, his life is held in suspension. And while it is not the most harsh in terms of sentencing, and by the way, what the media is focused on is just a total, it's such a total bunch of nonsense and speculation as usual, and conspiracy theories as usual. And we're going to get more. We're going to get the same thing as it relates to Michael Cohen. We'll get the same thing as it relates to Paul Manafort. Manafort, whatever cooperation deal he had with Mueller is pretty much gone. He's 70 years old. I guess they want to throw him in jail and make sure he never sees the light of day again, you know, because of something to do with a loan application and taxes. Why don't you let the guy go out and work and pay back the tax money that he owes? That might be a different way. They did that for Willie Nelson. What did he owe? $9 million in taxes? And he didn't put him in jail. They didn't charge him. It's unbelievable. You just, well, I like his music, so we're not going to charge him. Hannity, we hate his politics. He's going away forever. He'll never see the light of day. It's pretty disgraceful. It shocks the conscience, especially in light of what we know about what other people have done. And this is why I've always said this is the biggest abuse of power scandal, corruption scandal in history. And we have a dual justice system. And we don't have equal justice under the law. And we don't have equal application of our laws. This is just but the latest example of it. As now General Flynn's life was put on hold for a full year. And I'm going to read to you from the government's memoranda in Aidens. It's a sentencing recommendation note from Robert Mueller. The U.S. and the special counsel Robert Mueller respectfully submits this memorandum in the aid of the sentencing of defendant Michael T. Flynn on December 1st, 2017. He pleaded guilty to one count, making materially false statements to the FBI. Stop right there. So if you're like me and you grew up to revere an FBI agent, and the FBI comes to your house and maybe some crime took place in the neighborhood and maybe you have a little bit of information, but you don't quite fully recall everything, but you're pretty sure you do, the advice I have to give you now is don't talk to the FBI. How awful is that? Because we want to help our FBI because we want to help them solve crimes. We're good people. We play by the rules. We obey the laws in the country. We pay our taxes. You know, we shovel coffee down our throat. We go work our 12, 14 hours a day. We make our kids their lunch. We make them our dinner. We do a little homework with them. And we put on Hannity and fall asleep at 10 o'clock Eastern time. 7 o'clock Pacific is okay, too. That's the point. That's what everybody does. We want to get the people that are doing bad things because there's enough of them. Anyway, so it goes through the nature of the crime, the nature of the offense, and the defendant's history and characteristics are set forth, 18 U.S.C. 3553A. In addition to the addendum to this memorandum describes the defendant's assistance to the government. That's all that they want to fixate on, which is all redacted, and it's all speculation. And I don't think anything of what we're hearing is true because it just none of it makes sense. But they get to jump the gun because they want this all to they want everybody to believe Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians. Their biggest problem in all of this is the election and the time frame was over. Do you understand what I'm saying? Anything that Michael Flynn did and that we're dealing with in this sentencing recommendation statement of Robert Mueller's post, it doesn't matter. Didn't have anything to do with pre-election interference, Russian interference. You know, the fact that he indicted all of these intel agents from Russia who are never going to be held accountable for anything, Putin's not going to send them here to go on trial. And that's the same with the Russian bot companies that they indicted. Except for the one that responded, they don't even want to give discovery to. They're going to have to kill that case. Nature of the offense. False statement to the Department of Justice. The defendant's offense is serious. As described in the statement of offense, defendant made multiple false statements to multiple Department of Justice entities on multiple occasions. The first series of statements occurred during an interview with the FBI on January 24, 2017. At the time of the interview, the FBI had an open investigation into the Russian government's effort to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, including the nature of any links, coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald J. Trump. Days prior to the FBI's interview, the defendant, the Washington Post, had published a story that he had spoken with the Russian ambassador to the United States on December 29, 2016. Now, remember what it just said in the paragraph above. It's an ongoing investigation into any efforts of the Russians to interfere in the presidential election. They're talking about a meeting that took place, again, with a Russian ambassador and the incoming national security advisor to the president on December 29th. The election's over. So it has nothing to do. He would be talking to a soon-to-be counterpart in however many days. You know, what is it? January 20th in 22 days, the 3 weeks. So he had a brief conversation with the Russian ambassador because it was obvious and it was all stated that there were going to be different policy viewpoints between what Barack Obama was doing with Russia versus what Donald Trump would be doing with Russia. Just makes sense. Anyway, and that the story alleged that he had spoken with the Russian ambassador on December the 29th, 2016, the day the United States announced sanctions and other measures against Russia in response to the Russian government's intending to interfere with the 2016 election. Well, in October of that year, Obama himself said it's impossible. No serious person would believe it. And Donald Trump needs to stop whining. Yet Devin Nunes was warning that it's possible because they'd done it in previous elections and they were trying to do it in the 2016 election. He made that warning in 2014. Anyway, so the Post story that they refer to, January 12th, 2017, queried whether the defendant's actions violated the Logan Act, which prohibits U.S. citizens from corresponding with a foreign government with the intent to influence the conduct of that foreign government regarding disputes with the United States. That's 18 U.S.C. 953. But the Logan Act, it's what is this? It goes back how many centuries? It is a rarely invoked federal statute prohibiting the unauthorized private diplomacy with foreign nations. He's about to be the national security advisor, and he's meeting his soon-to-be counterparts. And he's telling them, well, things are going to be different when we get into office. That is not a violation of the Logan Act. This is such a stretch from the beginning. Now, let me remind you what General Flynn didn't know when he went in to discuss these issues with people is that they had already illegally surveilled him. They had illegally unmasked him. They had illegally obtained raw intelligence. Now, when an American citizen is on the phone with a foreign entity, we have what is a practice that should be applied for, unless the American is saying, hey, I want to be involved in a terrorist attack with you or some type of crime, which General Flynn was not doing. What they did is they violated the rules of surveillance. So they had a transcript of everything that he said. Anything that he didn't remember exactly, they're going to identify as a lie because that's what they want to find. And they go through this whole process with him, et cetera, et cetera. The defendant made a second series of false statements regarding the Republic of Turkey, blah, blah, blah. And then again, they cite the Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA. That never gets, if anyone gets caught as it relates to a FARA Act, in other words, you didn't register properly with the federal government, you just get a chance to fix it. It's like the Logan Act, for crying out loud. I mean, he's about to be one of our top national security officials. And they're making the biggest deal over a FARA filing being omitted. And as a material fact of officials from Turkey providing supervision direction over Turkey, etc. Anyway, then it goes on to say on Election Day 2016, the defendant published an op-ed for the Turkey Project, which called for the removal of a cleric cited residing in the U.S., whom the president of Turkey, I assume he's talking about Erdogan, blamed for the failed coup in that country. Cleric's responsibility for the coup attempt was a great debate, et cetera, et cetera. Defendant's op-ed of the cleric's role was valuable to the Republic of Turkey's efforts to shape public opinion. The defendant falsely represented his FARA filings. An op-ed was written in his own initiative as opposed for Turkey and the Turkey Project and the Republic of Turkey. So did you write it for them or did you write it for yourself? Did you do it as a favor? I mean, this is where we are. So here's Lieutenant Flynn, and I'm going to give you a list of all the people we know have lied and crimes that have been committed in a minute. This man's life now has been put on hold for a year. The position that he would have earned is gone. He had to literally sell his home. I'm selling his home because he couldn't afford to pay his lawyers anymore. He walked into a perjury trap because of illegally obtained information, illegal surveillance, illegal unmasking, not using the procedures and protocols of minimization, and then raw intelligence is used as a means to set a perjury trap for General Flynn. That's what happened here. Now, in the end, they say his history, his characteristics present mitigating and aggravating circumstances, and as detailed in the PSR report, the defendant's military and public service are exemplary. 33 years in the military he served, 5 years in combat duty, led the Defense Intelligence Agency, retired as a three-star lieutenant general, and the defendant's record of military public service distinguish him from every other person who has been charged in the special counsel's investigation. However, senior government leaders should be held to the highest standards. Anyway, the defendant's extensive government background should have made him aware of all this, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go on to conclude for the foregoing reasons, as well as those contained in the government's addendum motion for downward departure. The government admits that a sentence at the low end of the advisory guideline range is appropriate and wanted. Basically, he doesn't may will likely not spend any time in jail. He'll still be a felon, though. Now, when we get back, I'm going to tell you why this is so dangerous, why this is so corrupt, why this is an abuse of power, and why, if this is the standard, we're going to name the names of people that need to also. Well, relatively speaking, they ought to be in jail tomorrow. And then you're going to have to ask yourself whether or not we have an equal justice under the law system in America today, because the answer is no. one thing that is not political, it's smoking. That's about people. And there are 34 million Americans now that smoke. But for many, there's not been a clear alternative. Juul, for me, has been a game changer. I watch people all the time. They go outside in the middle of the freezing winter just to have their smoke. You don't have to do that anymore because of Juul. Now, people don't have to worry about the smell on your hands. Juul was specifically designed by smokers for smokers to be a satisfying alternative. It's a clean technology. Juul has no ash, no odor, no mess. If you're one of those 34 million adults who do smoke, you now know there's an alternative to cigarettes and cigars. Just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. That's JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. Now, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. But just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, Senator Grassley says, where's the perjury investigation for Fusion GPS Chief Glenn Simpson? Senator Grassley also pressing the FBI director to explain why there was a raid on the Clinton Foundation whistleblower. By the way, there's a lot coming. I'm telling you, just buckle up, and we're starting it tonight. We're going to break a very big story tonight that you don't want to miss. By the way, Mueller still refuses to release the FBI 302 witnesses in the reports on General Flynn's interview, which I think they should release and the public ought to be able to see. Here's what I think happened with General Flynn. Because remember, the FBI didn't think he lied. McCabe did not think he lied. Comey did not think he lied. Peter Strzok, who interviewed him, did not think he lied. Now, Comey lied. McCabe lied. I'll explain all the people that lied in the next segment. So they didn't think he lied, but they still charged him with perjury. You know, a process crime. Why? I can tell you, it's very obvious reading this sentencing recommendation. Because they did it because they didn't have anything on him. And they had already illegally surveilled and amassed and leaked the intelligence on General Flynn. So if he's whatever he said that was contradictory or he misremembered, they, you know, beat him over the head with a hammer. That's a lie. But General Flynn didn't lie. So it was probably the fact that A, he was going bankrupt, and B, they were probably going to bring his family into it because his son worked in his business that had dealings with foreign countries. So he finally said, all right, I'll dive on the sword like a good dad. That's how I interpret all of it. And I think all of that's going to be proven out to be true over time. And so then you ask yourself, well, why would they make you sign something if you didn't do it? Well, what do you think Jerome Corsi has been saying this last week and a half? That he won't lie to God under oath because it's going to get him, keep him out of jail. That's the whole Sammy the Bull Gravano argument that I make. Or Roger Stone saying he's not going to lie. Or the cooperation agreement with Paul Manafort blowing up because he obviously didn't have what they wanted and he wasn't going to lie or compose, as Judge Ellis said. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. You know, this is interesting. Byron York writes this piece in the Washington Examiner, and he points out today that the sentencing memo that I just referred to in the last half hour on General Flynn, released last night by Robert Mueller, omitted the single most critical document in the entire false statement case. Again, this is a 33-year service, three-star Lieutenant General Flynn, 5 years in combat, serving his country, 33 years. This is how we treat this man. And omitting the most critical document in the entire false statement case against Lieutenant General Flynn, and that is the 302 witness reports, which if Mueller's case was sound, that would reflect the assessment by the interviewing FBI agents that Flynn had indeed, quote, lied to them when they grilled him in January of 2017. On the other hand, if those FBI 302 witness interview assessments failed to indicate that Flynn lied, then as I suspect, the Mueller case, as well as his career, could be in deep trouble. Because the fact is, we already know because Comey told us so, that he didn't think that General Flynn lied. And neither did Andrew McCabe think that he'd lied, and neither did Peter Strzok think that he lied. And we had reported that back in May of last year. Then you ask the question, well, why would he sign a plea agreement that said he lied when we know he didn't lie? Everybody knows he didn't lie. Well, the purpose, when you can't get the underlying crime on somebody, well, the next thing you have available to you is, you know, a process crime, lying to the FBI. Okay, so that's what they go after this guy for, and that's a year of his life, putting his home up for sale, now having to, you know, be a convicted felon after a 33-year career with a stellar record protecting his country. Because if those 302s are released, I think I'm pretty confident that nobody's going to say in there that they thought that General Flynn was lying. You know, Congress a long time ago pressed the Justice Department to hand over the 302s. 302s are the conversations of the meetings that they have. In other words, the FBI would interview somebody like General Flynn and they would file it, what was said, what happened under a 302. Because the FBI did not originally think that Flynn lied. Then FBI Director, March of 2017, James Comey, told the House Intel Committee that the two FBI agents who questioned Flynn did not detect any deception during the interview, saw nothing that indicated to them that Flynn knew he was lying to them. You know, there is something as, I'll ask any one of you right now, think of your last birthday. Just in your mind's eye, do this. Think of your last birthday. And then think about who was there. Now, pick out one person that you know you spoke to for, say, more than 5 minutes at your last birthday event. More than 5 minutes. How much of that conversation do you think, and this is now less than a year ago, I'm assuming, unless your birthday's today, what could you tell me in complete accuracy about the conversation? Probably nothing. And this is the problem. Or, you know, maybe you texted somebody after. Are you supposed to remember what you texted? I don't think you would. So Comey now said essentially the same thing to the Senate Judiciary Committee about General Flynn. And, you know, that Chuck Grassley, quote, led us to believe the Justice Department was unlikely to prosecute Flynn for false statements made in the interview. Andrew McCabe told the House, quote, the two people who interviewed Flynn did not think he was lying, which was not a great beginning of a false statement case, he told the House Intel Committee. House investigators have a chance to learn more on all of this when, you know, apparently Comey appears before closed doors in this interview with members of the Judiciary and the House Oversight Committee chairs. And lawmakers have promised to release the transcript of the Comey interview within a day. So maybe we'll know next week or some other time. Now, if this is the case of lying and crimes of lies, then I think we've got to have, if we're going to have a justice system that is fair and we apply the laws equally, equal application of our laws, equal justice for every American under the law, then we have some really serious questions that we've got to ask as a country. Because, you know, there is a federal penal code that says it's unlawful to send stored classified information on personal emails. That's 18 U.S.C. 793, part of the Espionage Act. Now, we know that, in fact, Hillary Clinton, federal code, unlawful to send or store classified information on personal email. We know Hillary Clinton did that repeatedly. That's what that whole server was for. James Comey said she did that. Mark classified at the time. Then we have the violation of the Federal Records Act of 2009, Section 1236.22. The National Archives Records Administration Act requires that agencies that allow employees to send and receive official electronic mail messages using a system not operated by the agency must ensure that federal records sent or received on such a system are preserved in the appropriate agency for record keeping in the record keeping system. Well, that didn't happen with Hillary Clinton either. And we have the violation of the Freedom of Information Act, where Veterans for a Strong America filed a lawsuit against the State Department over the potential violations of the FOIA requests And the chairman of that group explaining to the Washington Examiner that the FOIA request over the Benghazi affair specifically asked for any personal email accounts Secretary Clinton may have used. This is stuff that Jeff Sessions should have been delving into deeply. But because for whatever reason he didn't, the next attorney general should. And then we have a case where, you know, although Attorney General, what about Loretta Lynch? Discussing golf, grandchildren, travels, 45 minutes on a tarmac, seeing Bill Clinton just days before she is scheduled to make her decision on whether or not Hillary violated the law by having that secret server in the mom and pop shop bathroom closet. She's overseeing that entire investigation that could involve civil criminal violations dealing with the mishandling of classified emails. So employees shall act impartially and not give preferential treatment to any private organization or individual. Well, that's also the law. You think anybody you know, maybe if your spouse was about to get a ruling handed down on whether or not they're going to be prosecuted, you think any of you would have gotten 45 minutes in a private jet with Loretta Lynch to talk about your grandchildren and golf? I tend to doubt it. Employees shall endeavor to avoid actions creating the appearance that they violated the law or the ethical standards set forth above. And finally, there's a regulation governing the Department of Justice attorney must be disqualified from a criminal investigation because of a personal and political relationship. That means that Attorney General Lynch was prohibited from participating in any of this from the get-go. It's a matter. Remember, she told Jim Comey, it's a matter. You know, if you just start now applying everything here, you begin to see everything we've told you about the handling of the Clinton email investigation. Why was there no grand jury impaneled in that case? Why was she not charged with violating the Espionage Act? How is it you can delete subpoenaed emails, 33,000 of them, and clean out your hard drive with bleach bit and bust up your devices with hammers? Why isn't she getting the Flynn treatment? How is that possible? Is that not obstruction of justice? You know, James Comey closed the investigation. Why did he take it in-house in the first place? Why didn't he let the field offices in the FBI handle this particular case? Why is it always the same people that were involved in every issue, from Flynn to the Clintons to the Russia investigation? It's always the same people. You know, Comey had publicly admitted he gave memos recording his interactions with President Trump to a friend at Columbia Law School with the intention that the contents would be leaked to the media, the New York Times, so that that would result in the appointment of a special counsel. Those documents were created on an FBI computer, which dealt with an ongoing, highly sensitive investigation. Any reasonable observer would conclude that those memos were FBI property. So does leaking them in this unauthorized way mean that Comey is guilty of theft of government property or records, or that he violated the Espionage Act himself? What about the dossier? You're going to hear a lot about the dossier on Hannity tonight, which was used to obtain FISA warrants against Carter Page, an associate of the Trump campaign, and two congressional committees already established. The FBI knew the dossier was largely fabricated, and James Comey himself described it to then incoming President Trump as salacious and unverified. Well, what about the fact that Hillary paid for it? They never told that to the FISA court judges that approved the application. And if it is salacious and unverified, how did it end up being the bulk of information, as the Grassley, Graham, and Nunes memos pointed out? And the dossier was compiled by someone that we know had a bias and animus towards Donald Trump, a foreign national by the name of Christopher Steele. And by the way, we know Glenn Simpson, or either him or somebody else, lied to Congress. Here's a list of people that we know lied to Congress. We know that James Clapper lied to Congress. I refer you to a January 19, 2018 USA Today article, headline, James Clapper Lies to Congress. We have The Guardian pointing out CIA Director Brennan lied to Congress. We have a New York Post article from 2017, Loretta Lynch lied to Congress. We have a Washington Examiner piece. James Comey lied to Congress. We have either James Comey or Loretta Lynch. This is a town hall piece. Again, lying to Congress. We have investors, I think it's IBD. Eric Holder lied to Congress. Lois Lerner, Washington Times, lied to Congress. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew under the Obama administration lied to Congress about a key part of the Iranian deal. We all know the FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, Washington Times, lied to Congress and investigators. We also know that Clinton aide Cheryl Mills lied to DOJ officials. That, too, is covered by the Washington Examiner. I don't see any of these people going through the treatment that General Flynn has gone through in the last year. Uma Abedin, Daily Caller, lied to Congress and DOJ officials. You get where we're going here? They don't want to release any of the information. You know, I loved what Giuliani said last night. You know, it's like this is comparable to spitting on the sidewalk, especially in light of the man's life and career of service and the fact that the information that they had, it's like, imagine, let's go back to the birthday analogy. Your last birthday, you had a conversation, pick one person you might have had a conversation with 5 minutes. And let's say that the people that are interviewing you about that conversation a year later have the exact transcript. Well, they had the exact transcript of Michael Flynn because they violated his Fourth Amendment rights by illegal surveillance, not using the process of minimization, and literally unmasking illegal an American citizen, General Flynn, and an American war hero. And then leaking raw intelligence to say he lied because he didn't remember the contents of a conversation that he had with his soon-to-be counterpart. I don't really consider that lying in any manner. But I think it became much deeper than that because I think they threatened his family and he probably had no choice. You know, they're sick puppies, Giuliani said. He's right. You know, they provided firsthand information about the content and context here. Now, next up, we're going to have Cohen and Manafort. You know, I don't think, who knows what those sentencing guidelines are going to say. I guess Cohen maybe will get the biggest break of all. And probably Manafort is looking at the rest of his life in jail. Over a 2007 tax case and false statements made on a loan application. In neither case does anything have to do with Russia. You know, the idea that Russia, Trump, Moscow, Russia, that they had discussions about possibly building something that never got built. Big deal. Nothing ever happened. So now I guess the last bit of this is, are they going to go after Jerome Corsi, who's 72 years old, who was offered a get out of jail free card if he would lie? Or as Judge Ellis said, you know, for the purpose of singing or composing, they're putting the screws to Manafort. They put the screws to anybody that's in any type of legal jeopardy in the hopes that you'll compose what they want you to say, because the bigger target in this case was and always will be Donald Trump and destroying him. And, you know, that's what it comes down to. I did notice that Roger Stone pled the fifth and is not going to give Senate documents or testify. Frankly, at this point, well, why bother? Why would anyone want to cooperate knowing what is in play here? That they're just out, they're not out to get to the truth, they're out to destroy. But that shouldn't surprise us when you hire, let's see, Strzok and Page were part of Mueller's team. Then you have Jeannie Ray, who was a lawyer for the Clinton Foundation. Then you got my favorite, Andrew Weissman. Here's a guy that lost tens of thousands of jobs at Enron Accounting in that case. And lost 9-0 in a U.S. Supreme Court case over it, has been charged with withholding exculpatory evidence in the past. Then we have the case of four Merrill executives he put in jail for a year. That was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. Where do those four guys go to get their lives back? Whatever happened to prosecutorial discretion? Where is any sense of proportionality in all of this? It's not there because it's all about an agenda of destroying and the delegitimization of a duly elected president.
His inaugural address, the 41st president of the United States said this: "We cannot hope only to leave our children a bigger car, a bigger bank account. We must hope to give them a sense of what it means to be a loyal friend, a loving parent, a citizen who leaves his home, his neighborhood, and town better than he found it. What do we want the men and women who work with us to say when we are no longer there? That we were more driven to succeed than anyone around us, or that we stopped to ask if a sick child had gotten better and stayed a moment there to trade a word of friendship? Well, Dad, we're going to remember you for exactly that and much more. And we're going to miss you. Your decency, sincerity, and kind soul will stay with us forever. So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again.
All right, that was George W. Bush at the service of his father, George H.W. Bush. Very touching moment. Watched the whole thing, and I thought it went off perfectly. And I don't know, it was just you look into somebody's soul. How do you want to be viewed after you're gone? What do you want to be remembered for? We talked to Ron DeSantis, governor of the great state of Florida. How are you, sir? Welcome aboard. What were your interactions with the Bushes like?
Well, it was interesting, Sean. I was the captain of the Yale baseball team in 2001, and that was the 300th anniversary of the university, and so they had a big jubilee, and the main speaker was Bush 41, who was, I think, the only Yale undergrad to ever be elected president, or one of a few. And so he asked to come out to baseball practice to meet the team, and he just wanted to wish us well, wanted to see how we were doing. So I got to introduce him to the rest of the team. My coach pulled me aside before and said, listen, the president's going to come. Tell all these knuckleheads, don't drop any F-bombs in front of him. Be respectful. And I'm like, of course. And but he was a very humble guy and was just interested in how we were doing and really loved his time playing baseball, really loved the sport. And so I had never really even met anyone that was famous at that point in my life. And it was, I was like, man, yeah, this is a good guy. And I've always just thought he was a really good guy. And then when you think about his life, when he, the most famous picture in Yale athletics history is H.W. Bush as the captain in 1948 receiving Babe Ruth's autobiography from the Bambino. Babe was going to die 6 months later, but you have this epic picture of them at Yale Field with thousands of people there, and there's this handoff. And so at that point in Bush 41's life, he's playing college baseball, but he had already fought in World War II. He joined when he was 18, so he was already a bona fide American hero and had already lived a lot of life by the time he was playing college baseball. So just a really first-class individual.
You know, I've known the family. I've interviewed all of them many, many times, including Barbara and H.W. and 43 many times, and Jeb and other extended family members over the years. So I know them very, very well. They are what they seem that they are. They're really good, honorable, hardworking, decent people that, you know, have this sense, this calling for service. And obviously you have it as well because you're part of the Freedom Caucus. Now you're the governor-elect of Florida. When do you get sworn in?
January 8th, and so from that day forward, Sean, I'm going to be pestering you to move the studio down to Naples so that I can save you a lot of money on your taxes. So just be ready for that. I warned you that during the whole campaign. It's going to happen because I think
it is the greatest story because all these companies, if you read the Star Ledger had a good piece a while back about this, and there's been other articles written about how there are massive amounts of money, wealth, leaving states like New York and states like Illinois and California and New Jersey, and they're leaving because of the horrific economic environment, the high taxes, burdensome regulation. I mean, we saw it out in California recently, you know, these horrific fires, and then we find out, well, there's 130 million dead trees that people aren't allowed to cut down, that the state is not allowing people to even remove the kindling brush when it gets dry. I mean, that stuff's flying all over the place, especially if you have a high wind or a Santa Ana wind. There's no more, you know, timber industry. They destroyed that to protect whatever species of whatever. And what they have done now is created an environment where you can't put these fires out anymore. And now people are dying. I mean, bad government policies. So you see the migration of states like Florida. I really think had Florida gone in the other direction and you would have elected the mayor of Tallahassee, who had the worst economic record, the worst crime record in his city, I think it would have been a disaster for Florida because he was talking about a 40% corporate tax. And I think you would have seen businesses leaving on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had people who said they were going to leave out of Florida and go elsewhere. And that does happen from time to time. Sometimes people will come to Florida, and sometimes they will move to, like, North Carolina after they're retired or something like that. Now, it doesn't happen as that much, but there's reasons for that. But that would have accelerated. I mean, you would have seen a lot of people flee. All the people who are looking at potentially coming down here, these businesses would have fought twice and probably would have decided not to do it. So we're in a really good spot because we have a good record of success. I'm going to continue good policies and can even build off those. I'm going to get to a point on my first day in office, 3 Supreme Court justices here in Florida. One of the problems we've had with Florida government for a generation has been an activist liberal majority on our Supreme Court. While I get sworn in, I sign these judicial appointments, and judicial activism is done in Florida. That's going to be good for our freedoms, but it's also good for having a good economic environment because they would strike down things that the legislature would pass, like tort reform, because they were siding with basically the liberal interests. And so it was a very political court, and that's coming to an end very soon.
I've got to ask you, in light of it's now 18 years since 2000 and, of course, the recount that took place with swinging and pimpled and dimpled and hanging and perforated chads and whether that's a vote or meant to be a vote, an overvote, an undervote. And, you know, here we are almost every election year we have problems in Broward and Palm Beach counties. And it seems to me that for whatever reason, nobody's just stepped in to fix it. Will you have, as governor, the authority to get a system of voting in Florida that will work where people couldn't, you know, be up to shenanigans or no good?
Oh, yeah. So there'll be things I can do unilaterally, but then there'll probably be an election reform package that we pass in the legislative session, making sure I'm really concerned about what's going on in California with this ballot harvesting. I think that that's prone to fraud. So we want to make sure that the absentee votes through the mail in Florida have integrity. We want to make sure those are documented when they come in, because what Broward was doing, supposedly they would get these ballots in during early voting and some absentee ballots, and they just never even logged that these things are coming in. And then all of a sudden, 48 hours after the election, they start counting 75,000 to 80,000 votes. That is unacceptable. That causes people to lose confidence in the results.
I don't think I'm a big fan of, you know, month-long voting either, because I think that lends itself to some type of corruption at some point, unless you're going to have a representative from every party stand watch over the ballots 24 hours a day.
And the thing is, too, Sean, with some of this, the way we do the early and absentee, and I'm not sure we're going to necessarily move away from vote by mail in Florida because it's a lot of people like to do it. I imagine we're going to continue to have some level of early voting. But the thing is, some of these states, you start voting in, like, the beginning of October. My first debate with my opponent in the governor's race wasn't until October 21st. People were already voting before we even had a debate. And so I think that the more you spread out the voting, obviously you have different issues with administration, potential for fraud in different areas. But then it's like, are we making like one crisp decision as an electorate? And you don't really do that anymore. It's kind of like a rolling process, and not all voters have the same access to the same information when they choose to cast their ballot. So it's just a little different.
All right, last question, and then we'll let you go. So the three governors that I got to know best in New York were Rick Scott, who's now going to be a senator, Rick Perry of Texas, and Bobby Jindal when he was the governor of Louisiana. These three governors came up to New York, and I couldn't believe they were up all the time. And I was always asking, why are you here? And I thought, what, are you taking free New York vacations? It was never the case. They were all competing successfully to get and entice and talk to big businesses in New York with their high taxes, burdensome regulation, horrible winters and enticing them to states like Florida, where they're going to get a better style, lifestyle and be able to produce more of their product at a cheaper rate and get, you know, much better deals for homes and everything else in between. And so many people have moved down there. That probably one of the reasons, too, those three states don't have a state income tax.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's going to happen, I'll continue that, but I think we can even do it at a greater level because this spring is the first year where people are going to have to fill out their tax returns and not be able to deduct the state tax, state income taxes. And so that's going to hit a lot of people in New York. It's going to hit you, Sean, big time. It's going to hit people in New Jersey, Connecticut.
So if I live down there 6 months and a day, I can officially be a Florida resident.
That's right. And the amount of money you will save, I mean, you could buy a new house down there. I know you give a lot of money to charity. I mean, you're talking probably give millions more dollars to charity. I mean, it would be better off for Florida's economy, but I think the money would be better rather than wasted, you know, in the New York.
I'm looking at my whole staff. My whole staff is looking at me. Hey, stupid, why don't you make the move? Stupid. That's what everyone's telling me with their eyes right now.
John, you could make the move. You could pay to relocate your staff. You could probably pay for them to have new homes, and you'd still save money.
I 100%. I mean, and that's why the only thing that worries me is you got people from these high tax Northeast states, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts. It's happening. People have been leaving states like Michigan and drove, but Illinois, California, they can move to Florida. They can move to Texas, but they can't bring their liberal views with them. They've already helped destroy one state. You can't don't go down and ruin the next state that you're living in.
I can tell you this, from the people that, particularly in the Midwest, the people that moved down from the Midwest to Florida, they are really, really strong for us usually as Republicans. I mean, we register a lot of transplanted Midwesters because I think
they tend to go to the southwest part of Florida, Naples, Fort Myers, Sarasota. A lot of people from New York seem to gravitate towards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But these people get it. And I think that we've had a lot of success with folks coming down from particularly the Midwest.
Listen, you take away the panhandle, and boy, they came out in huge numbers for you. And you take away Southwest Florida, and you got a blue state in Florida, you know, especially Southeast Florida. I-4 corridor is always up for grabs. That's always a tough spot, right?
Yeah, so, you know, and I did better than most Republicans do in Southeast Florida in terms of lowering the margins, and we did do good in the panhandle. Now, the place that got hit by the hurricane, they did come out and vote, you know, pretty good numbers, but their increase wasn't quite what some of these other counties were, and I think the hurricane had a lot to do with it. But and then we you know, held our own in Central Florida. But, yeah, Southwest Florida, where you came for us, Sean, was huge, and then you were up in Northwest Florida for us, too. Those are two huge areas for Republicans, and they came in big for us.
All right, Ron DeSantis, congrats on being governor, and we're looking forward to every time you're in New York, come stop by, and I have no problem with you offering better deals for people. That's the free market system, and companies that want to save money and have less government burdensome regulation on their backs. Florida is obviously the top state. It's my second home now, so. All right, Ron DeSantis, thank you, sir.
We'll take out a good studio for you in Naples, Sean, so that the mood...
All right, thank you, sir. All right, let's get to our busy phones as we continue. 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a proud member of the program. We love having you. As we say hi to Frank is in Los Angeles, KEIB. What's up, Frank? How are you, sir?
Hey, Sean, I'm doing well, thank you, and I appreciate you taking my call. Just real quick, just following up on what you were speaking about yesterday with Christmas and that type of stuff, and first of all, I'm not a highly religious person, but I noticed where I live out in the west end of the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, and there's an area called the Commons in Calabasas. And I was looking for the Christmas tree that they normally put up there for, you know, the holiday season, and I noticed it was gone. So I called up the company that owns that, this guy Rick Caruso from Caruso Development, and they were telling me that they're not going to have a tree today or this year because the tree died. So no artificial tree, nothing along those lines. So I try not to be conspiratorial on it, but I also don't want to be a sap. And I wonder that if that's just one more thing where, you know, Christmas is not what it was.
Look, I go out of my way, because I have friends of all backgrounds, faiths, and religions. And when you say Merry Christmas to somebody, you're not saying it to offend them. If you know that, like, for example, Hanukkah is going on now, and I say to many of my friends that I know that are celebrating Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah. And I just think at the end of the day that it's kind of a basic, simple thing to do. All right, quick break, right back. We'll continue on the other side. Also, we'll be checking in with Cheryl Atkinson. Her case is moving forward as she was spied on by her own government. She'll explain next.
Volunteering to serve in World War II, as I was going on to serve as an ambassador, CIA director, congressman, vice president, president, a whole life of public service. Donald Trump has been a life of service to himself.
They both believe that the presidency is bigger than themselves, which is not something that this president always adheres to.
But I think this is also a 24 hours of nostalgia about what leadership used to look like in this country.
There's a great clip from 1980 when George H.W. Bush is challenged on his how tough he is. And he talks about toughness is about having values and standing for them, being principles. Toughness is not attacking.
As a candidate, he said, those who think we're powerless to do anything about the greenhouse effect are forgetting about the White House effect. And then he signed into law the Clean Air Act Amendment of 1990, one of the most sweeping environmental statutes ever.
Yeah.
This president that we have now is trying to unravel everything that he did and Obama did. And
can we focus on the president, please? I don't want to talk about Trump. We're honoring a great president in his past.
Please, I want to talk about
but the we're honoring, but I'm not interested in your one issue.
I don't care what you're interested in. I'm talking.
Well, I don't care
you
what you're
what?
Interested
Damn
in
it.
Either.
We'll be right back.
Boy.
All right, 24 now to the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. Our toll-free telephone number, you want to be a part of the program. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She hosts her own show on Sinclair Media called Full Measure on Sundays. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Smears and Stonewalled. And I read a column by you about, it was thick, all the examples you had listed of all the times, Cheryl, the media has misreported, lied to the American people as it relates to Donald Trump. It sounds like it would be the definitive book called Fake News, if you will.
What was remarkable to me when I started compiling the examples was I was looking for other examples, too, like mistakes that came out that happened to be in favor of Trump, but there weren't any. I mean, there may still be some. Maybe I haven't seen them all. But all of them, coincidentally, were mistakes that hurt Trump or were intended to hurt Trump, and also mistakes by some of the formerly most well-respected news organizations in the world making Bush League junior mistakes that wouldn't be tolerated in journalism school, but usually with pretty much total impunity.
Give me some of the best or worst examples that kind of shocked you?
I think one of the most definitive, because it set the stage and the tone, was the Time magazine reporter that on the day of President Trump's inauguration falsely reported that he had removed the bust statue of Martin Luther King from the Oval Office.
Yeah, that was a doozy.
Never happened.
That was a doozy.
But the origin of that mistake was the reporter not even doing the basic due diligence that we learn we're required to do in journalism school, and I don't even think you have to be taught this, to check your facts. If you think you see something missing or you hear it, you call and ask. And someone would have immediately told him that it was still there. He just didn't see it. And they had to issue a correction because that went worldwide. Of course, the correction never travels quite so far as the original misreporting.
No, the reporting reporting is on A1. The correction is on page 837 in the left-hand bottom corner with the tiniest print they could ever make up.
And in today's terms, the mistake is circulated. It goes viral on Twitter, and the correction is not seen.
You know, I've been doing now for over a year and a half, and I have an ensemble cast that has been helping us. And tonight we have a very explosive report as it relates to a series of email chains have now been discovered, and in them, without giving away all the details of this, top officials knowingly knew that they never verified what turned out to be the lying dossier of Christopher Steele. But it didn't stop them from using the bulk of the information from that unverified, uncorroborated, bought and paid for Russian propaganda of Hillary It didn't stop them from committing a fraud on a FISA court, but not only once, four separate times in their FISA court applications. They also purposely withheld the origination of such a report, and they held it out as if they had gone through proper protocol and procedures and vetting, and that they were they had verified it and corroborated it, and they never did. And these are many of the top name people you would know. And I'm just sitting back and I'm watching that. If you or I committed a fraud like that on the court, I think we'd probably be looking at serious jail time.
Why doesn't the court care? I think you put your finger on something that people don't understand, I think, widely how important it is, because there's something I've written about, and I was tipped off to this by someone in the intel agencies, called Woods procedures. These were instituted in 2001 because of abuses and material presented to the FISA court that said, from that point on, this information, every fact presented to the FISA court, must be personally verified by the FBI, not just in a secondhand way or through media reports, personally investigated and verified. And if a single fact is not verifiable, they have to go back to the drawing board. They're not allowed to go to the court. This seems to me on its face to have violated what is a very, very serious rule and perhaps a criminal violation inside the Justice Department that nobody seems to care about. But that was instituted in 2001 under, by the way, Mueller, when he was head of the FBI.
How is it possible? I mean, you were closer, more of a more in the mainstream media than I've ever been. You know, it's funny. People ask me all the time, although they'll make a statement. Well, you're not a journalist. And I say, well, I don't view my job description as being a journalist. I think I'm a talk show host. But under the banner of being a talk show host, Cheryl, I can give you hours and hours of radio and television coverage where I was a straight news reporter. In other words, I just report the facts about a story that's unfolding. That's part of my job, a big part of my job. We've done investigative reporting on, for example, Obama's radical ties prior to the election in 2008. And most of those stories, the media wouldn't go near. They wouldn't even touch them. You know, imagine that he starts his career in the homes of Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and he only got asked one time, and it only happened because George Stephanopoulos was on my radio show the day before, and I said, what are you going to ask him about Ayers and Dorn? He said, who are they? He had never heard of them. You know, or the same with the deep state investigation, which I know you have also done some work on, but we've been able to discover a lot of information about the server that Hillary Clinton did have classified and top secret information on it. And we do now have pretty well confirmed that it was hacked by at least six foreign intelligence services, that in spite of what James Comey said, that they were writing an exoneration in early May. He was doing it with Peter Strzok before they interviewed her in early July and before they exonerated her. And in the meantime, they had changed the legal standard from gross negligence to extreme carelessness. And then we know that they immediately began the witch hunt into Donald Trump with no reason whatsoever to go forward. But they ignored that Hillary bought and paid for a Russian dossier by funneling money through a law firm to an op research group to a foreign national. I didn't think foreign nationals was supposed to impact our elections. And that he got all this Russian dirt, supposedly, on Donald Trump. It's known as the dossier. That information was disseminated to the American people. It was used as the bulk, according to the Grassley Graham Nunes memos, the bulk of information to obtain FISA warrants against a Trump campaign associate, and then later used as a media leak strategy to bludgeon and delegitimize Trump because they had this plan, this insurance policy in place. Now, that sounds a lot worse than General Flynn, who served his country 33 years and 5 years in combat, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and I've become convinced, based on the evidence that's come out in the past year and a half, that there is something you can either call, you know, procedure, narrative, or I think an operation that was conducted and has been conducted that involves the news media, using the news media, that involves leaks, that involves foreign intelligence, that involves our own intelligence, surveillance, and all kinds of things designed to controversialize this president and those around him, and to keep him, in particular, General Flynn, who was going to look at alleged surveillance abuses inside the intel community that occurred in recent years, to keep them from getting close to that. And it's been very successful in those terms, because anytime President Trump suggests getting close to digging around or looking at some of these alleged abuses, they can cry obstruction and do, whether it is or not. And was that part of the insurance policy they discussed in advance? So I think all of these things are coming together in a pretty clear way that you would be hearing more about if the tables were turned party-wise.
One attorney general that believes in equal application of our laws and equal justice under the law. Because if we do, then all of these things will be investigated and all of these things will be prosecuted. And General Flynn, who was speaking to his soon-to-be Russian counterpart after the election, does not represent any collusion of any kind. But meanwhile, this guy lost his house, couldn't afford the lawyers involved. And he now, you know, may face a little jail time. It doesn't look like it, but I hope to God not. But a year of his life is gone. You were involved in your memoir. You recalled that a source connected to a government agency implicated a sophisticated entity that used commercial, non-attributable spyware that is proprietary as a to a government agency, either the CIA, the FBI, Defense Intelligence Agency, or National Security Agency in a breach, and you're suing the Justice Department of the Obama years of illegally surveilling your computers and seeking $35 million in damage. By the way, the information that they got on General Flynn was obtained illegally. How is your case going?
Well, we're still in there 4 years later, which is itself an accomplishment because, as you may know, the government enjoys all kinds of automatic immunities. And they've been fighting this case still under Trump, same people as did under Obama, the Justice Department, fighting using your tax dollars and kind of trying to bleed me dry and avoid discovery. You know, we need discovery to get the names of the people who were involved in this operation, which has been confirmed with parts of five different forensics exams. But we can't get the names if they won't agree to discovery. And instead of launching their own criminal investigation, which is what the Justice Department ought to have done long ago into these intrusions, which are confirmed, they're defending the intruders in court. So there is, you may know, you know, no press group stepped forward, no civil liberties group stepped forward to assist in the case. And when some attorneys found out that recently, when I spoke at a fourth surveillance abuse conference to some lawyers, they started a Fourth Amendment litigation fund for me. And, you know, because this has become extremely expensive. So there is a GoFundMe related to it. And we're going to keep going as long as we can. We have oral arguments now scheduled, which is positive, for late January in this case to try to get discovery.
If we allow the abuse of the powerful tools of intelligence that we entrust to our intelligence community to turn them on the American people like this, and this is when you were investigating issues like Benghazi and some other things, then we're no better than the former Soviet Union in any way. All right, more with Cheryl Atkinson on the other side of this. We'll put that GoFundMe link up on our website, Hannity.com, straight ahead. All right, as we continue with Cheryl Atkinson, 800-941-SEAN is our number. So you were able to get some attorneys that took on your case, and you now know for a fact that within the government, they illegally surveilled, unmasked, and then leaked raw intelligence on him. And in your case, it's pretty much the same thing. You now you have all the evidence, forensic evidence, that one of these agencies' systems were put on your computer and you were hacked for the purpose of your government getting the information that you were producing on topics they didn't like covered. Is that correct?
It is. And I think, you know, my case came out. CBS announced the remote intrusion a few months after we had discovered them internally and started investigating them. But my case happened, we discovered it with the help of some intel insiders before Edward Snowden, before Clapper gave misinformation to Congress, before we knew the government had spied on AP and Fox News. So it seemed so incredible at the time, but now it's important, not because of me, because I know it's important to me, but why should it be important to other people? It was a symptom of this entire system of surveillance abuses going on that they are now trying not to let us dig into. Which is why I think, at least partly why they did what they did to Trump and his associates. So my case figures in very prominently in that whole alleged cover-up of what these agencies have been doing for years, including, by the way, under Mueller, who's now investigating it. And I'm not saying he's not an honest broker. I don't know him. I know people who like him. I know people who like him less. But he was in charge of the FBI when some of these things were happening. So you know, it's all very twisted and tied up together.
I've had people on this program say that every phone call, every text, every email is metadata stored. Now, these are guys that were involved in the system. I've never been able to confirm it myself, but it sounds a little 1984-ish to me. But in your case, you actually have hard evidence that you were specifically targeted and they were using the powerful tools of intelligence that we entrust to them. We'll continue to follow it. Cheryl Atkinson, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Second in command, McCabe, was fired for lying multiple times within the FBI. You defended his character on Twitter. That's okay. Lying is okay internally.
No, it's definitely not. In fact, the McCabe case illustrates what an organization that's committed to the truth looks like. We investigated Holt. I ordered that investigation. Mm-hmm. We investigate and hold people accountable. Good people lie. I lay out in the book, I think I'm a good person where I've lied. I still believe Andrew McCabe is a good person, but the inspector general found that he lied, and there's severe consequences in the Justice Department for lying, as there should be throughout the government.
Well, I did see the president at the Phoenix airport the other night. As I was landing, he was headed out. He did come over and say hello and speak to my husband and myself and talk about his grandchildren and his travels and things like that. So that was the extent of that. And no discussions were held on any cases or anything of that. And he didn't raise anything about that either.
The president's tweeted innumerable times calling you a leaker. What's your response to President Trump?
Look, it's true. I mean, I'm the one who testified about it. That's how people know about it. I gave that unclassified memo to my friend and asked him to give it to a reporter. That is entirely appropriate.
It's not appropriate when it's classified information. That would be under the Espionage Act, 18 U.S.C. 793. If you look at every single thing that now has happened to General Flynn. By the way, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour, 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, so we have these different codes and laws that make it unlawful to send or to store classified information on personal email. That is not in dispute for Hillary Clinton. And I want you to think through this through the prism of a 33-year serviceman, three-star, by the name of Lieutenant General Flynn. Because all the other people that supposedly lied, that committed crimes, they haven't been in jeopardy in the last year as we have been peeling away every single layer of the onion. You know, you just start at the beginning, Executive Order 13526, 18 U.S.C. 793. The federal code makes it unlawful to send or store classified information on personal email. Okay, well, James Comey admitted to that, too, doing his own personal business on his private email. So he and Hillary have a lot of similar issues that are in play. And you have a violation of the 2009 Federal Records Act and National Archives and Records Administration. They require that agencies that allow employees to send and receive official electronic mail messages using a system not operated by the agency must ensure that Federal Records Center received on such systems are preserved in the appropriate agency that of record keeping. Well, if you use deletions and bleach bit and hammers, you're not preserving it, or are you preserving the law? That would also be a violation of the Freedom of Information Act, where it states very clearly, especially with the State Department, over many violations where they are supposed to keep all of these records for the purpose of oversight. In one case, in the case of government oversight, in the case of we the people have oversight when it's not related to national security issues. You know, remember Loretta Lynch under her watch, because that was an important point. Although Loretta Lynch described the meeting as primarily social, talking about golf and grandchildren, she was just about to make the decision about whether or not Bill Clinton's wife, when they met on the tarmac in Arizona, had committed crimes while overseeing the investigation into his wife and that private email server. And there's one law after another. Employees shall act impartially and not give preferential treatment to any private organization or individual. There was nobody in the world that would be facing the crimes that Hillary was facing, and the attorney general meets with that person's spouse. That's never going to happen. Or employees shall endeavor to avoid any actions creating the appearance that they're violating the law or ethical standards. These are specific mandates. You know, you got James Comey, and you look at him and all the different things that we've talked about. James Comey publicly admitted that he gave the memos of his interactions with President Trump to his Columbia Law School professor friend. And then why? For the purpose of the New York Times leaking it, for the purpose of getting a special counsel put in place. James Comey closed out the Clinton email investigation and telling Congress he made the decision to clear her after she was interviewed by the FBI. But the FBI documents, we know that that exoneration was written in early May. And the handling of the Clinton administration, why was no grand jury impaneled in that case? Why was it taken out of the hands of the field agents? Comey publicly admitting that he gave memo recordings of his interactions with President Trump. Really? Who does this? Then, of course, the dossier. And this is where we're going to have big news tonight on Hannity. But you want to know the people that lied? James Clapper lied to Congress. See USA Today. Or the Guardian story on John Brennan lying to Congress. Or Loretta Lynch in the New York Post. A great article about her. We'll put them up on Hannity.com lying to Congress. James Comey lying to Congress. Loretta Lynch on another occasion. Or James Comey lying to Congress because they contradict each other. You know, then you got Eric Holder. We knew about that. He lied to Congress. Lois Lerner lied to Congress. Great article in the Washington Times about her. Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary. Washington Post had a story about the lies he told Congress about a key part of the Iranian deal. We know the deputy FBI director McCabe lied. And we have Clinton aide Cheryl Mills lying to DOJ officials. And Uma Abedin, same thing. When does the lying stop? Why is it only General Flynn that's in this position? Denise McAllister is with us, co-author of Spygate, which, by the way, is required extensive research on the Mueller team. Greg Jarrett, number one bestseller, The Russia Hoax. I don't see any of these other important people being brought up on charges of having lied and being treated the way that General Flynn is being treated, Greg.
Well, you're right, because there's sort of two standards. If you're connected or support Donald Trump, you will have the full force of the federal government coming after you with a vengeance. But if you're a member of the Obama administration or friends of Bill and Hill, you get a free pass on everything. And this is why Americans have come to distrust and indeed fear their own government, especially the FBI and the Department of Justice. And as you and I were talking last night, I mean, it's come to the point now, you know, if Mueller or the FBI comes to your door and wants to talk, shut the door. Don't talk. Call the nearest lawyer. Do not hand over documents. And, you know, because Mueller plays a gotcha game. If you don't remember a memo or an email you sent 2 years ago, you can bet he's got his hands on it, and he's waiting for you to say, I don't recall,
well, that's called,
or
well, that's,
I didn't that, send that memo.
Well, what if you don't recall? I mean, I was trying to be a little clever with you last night on TV when I said, do you think about this. This is an important day in your life, the day you had worked, you know, well over a year pounding out every word alone in your book, because I watched you do it. Your office is two doors down from mine. And every day I saw you working and working and working. Anyway, it's so you get to this momentous day and the book finally comes out and we're talking about it on the show. And I said, do you remember the conversation that we had that day? And your answer is no, you don't remember specifics of that conversation. So
of course not.
If you were saying that to Robert Mueller, I guess that means that you lied under oath like General Flynn. General Flynn was supposed to remember the contents of a meeting that he had with his soon to be counterpart at a time that was frenetic with a new incoming administration. I don't believe that standard is ridiculous to me.
Well, you're absolutely right. And in fact, Mueller could never prove a case in a court of law that he's brought against people like Papadopoulos and Flynn. Because under the law, look at the statute, 18 U.S.C. 1001. It requires that the alleged false statement be made knowingly and willingly. Failing to properly recollect something is not a crime. And yet Mueller criminalizes that, which is not a crime, to come after you for partisan and political reasons.
Let me bring in our good friend D.C. McAllister here and get your take on the whole Flynn situation and the massive double standard. By the way, tonight at 9, we're blowing open a story that is, it should shock the conscience of every American. We now have discovered email chains. I'll give you a hint. It has to do with FISA abuse, everything we've been saying, except now we've got smoking gun evidence tonight. But Denise, as or DC, as you look at this, I'm just wondering, we're literally watching the destruction of our justice system because we're not applying the laws equally. All these people that I mentioned either lie to Congress, lie under oath. Hillary Clinton is Exhibit A. They didn't spend the last year of their life having to sell their house because they're being haunted by a witch hunt and now potentially facing even some jail time, having massive amounts of time with the special counsel trying to get any little nugget he can get so he can get at Trump and hoping that somebody composes. So how do you fix a system that has gone that far awry?
Well, the first thing you need to do is expose it. And Greg is right. There's a two-tier system of justice in our justice system. And you see this throughout this investigation from the very beginning, all the way through the special counsel, and we're seeing it today. And with General Flynn, remember, that was in the middle of a counterintelligence investigation. It was not a criminal investigation. When they interviewed him, they had the transcript before them of what he had said. So why were they even asking him what he had said if they already had what he had said? Because remember, this is a counterintelligence investigation. So the whole interview that was going on was not even necessary. It just reeks of a setup. And then they pounded on him, met with him like 19 times trying to get information out of him because they need him to be the connection between Trump and the Russian government to have any kind of real crime going on. They're, again, as they've been doing from the very beginning, looking for a crime, using people to look for a crime, setting up, maneuvering, manipulating any little thing, like you said, that is averted, forgotten, maybe even a little lie because you're trying to cover for somebody. As a, you know, he didn't want Pence to look bad when he came out and said there had been no Russian contacts during the campaign. These are the kind of things, whenever this happens, Mueller's there, you know, with the trap. And he needs it. He needs to have his probe justified and legitimized because from the very beginning, this has been to cover up and get you deflected away from the crimes of the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton.
And that's the point. The double standard, you know, is glaring. And especially, how do you have an investigation into Russian collusion and influence in the 2016 election and not go after Hillary's bought and paid for dossier that was put together by an admitted liar who, even after the fact, after being fired, after admitting that it was unverified and raw intelligence and he didn't know if any of it was true, Greg Jarrett, but then he's still contacting the Department of Justice vis-a-vis Bruce Orr and trying to send messages to Special Counsel Mueller. So the special counsel that, you know, is mad at the lying of General Flynn was seeking the lies of Christopher Steele, the liar.
Yeah, you know, it is anathema to fairness and justice to be selective in how you enforce the law. If anybody engaged in a Russian collusion, it was Hillary Clinton who paid for Russian information, fed it secretly to the FBI and the Department of Justice to damage Trump. As I recount in my book, The Russia Hoax, that's a violation of the law, and I explain why, and yet nobody has ever investigated, much less prosecuted, Hillary Clinton and the others involved in that illicit scheme. And yet, you know, there is not a scintilla of evidence that anyone in the Trump campaign, much less President Trump, ever colluded or conspired or coordinated with Russians to win the election. Just look at, I wrote a column published last night on FoxNews.com. It's entitled, Mueller Strikes Out Trying to Nail Trump. Flynn's sentencing memo is a big nothing. If you examine the sentencing memo and the addendum, there is nothing in there that ties Trump and Russia to this amorphous and elusive crime called collusion.
Right. And that article that Greg is referring to is up on Hannity.com. Stay right there. More with D.C. McAllister. Greg Jarrett, 800-941-SEAN is our number. All right, we're going to wrap things up. We've got about 30 seconds each for D.C. McAllister and Greg Jarrett. Greg, we'll start with you. With this blockbuster coming out tonight, and all these people we know lied, is there now a standard set? Will they now be held accountable?
With a new confirmed by the Senate Attorney General, somebody like Congressman John Ratcliffe, who would be great in that position, the answer would be yes, he will hold these people accountable. So I'm optimistic it'll happen.
D.C.?
Well, we also have to remember that the IG has reports coming out in his own investigations, and there's a bit of a war probably going on there in the Justice Department between these two entities trying to get to the truth. And I think Mueller is really afraid of what Horowitz is going to come out with. And if he does his job like he did in the first report, they will be held accountable and exposed.
Well, can't come soon enough. All right, D.C. McAllister, Greg Jarrett, thank you. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We have some Christmas issues we've got to sort through. We'll get to them and much more as we continue. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of this extravaganza, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be with us. Joining us now is Pastor Robert Jeffers. He's the pastor of the First Baptist Church. It's a huge, beautiful church in Dallas. And Pastor Daryl Scott, he's the executive director of the National Diversity Coalition for President Trump, senior pastor at the New Spirit Revival Center, also a beautiful church. The only church, you know, I think these are the only two churches in America that ever let me speak in them. And I did a horrible job each time, but I tried my best. Anyway, welcome both of you. So the scene was, you have this scene set up over the weekend, and it was baby Jesus inside a black cage in Boston and three wise men separated by a fence with a sign that reads deportation. Obviously, they're talking about the caravan and not having open borders, etc. I'm like, we can't leave even Christmas. And even Christmas every year has to become political. Right, Pastor Jeffers?
Well, that's right. And, Sean, this illustrates how the left has allowed their hatred for Donald Trump to blind them to the truth, including the truth about Christmas. I mean, Christmas is not about immigration. It's about salvation. Jesus wasn't some illegal immigrant. He was the Son of God. And, you know, there's nothing in the Christmas story to tell us that Mary, Joseph, and Jesus entered Egypt illegally, and they certainly didn't come in a caravan filled with 5,000 people, including criminals who wanted to do harm to the Egyptians. This is absolutely ludicrous.
It really is absolutely insane, but this is the environment we live in, Pastor Scott. I told the story the other day, and the reaction to it was unbelievable. We have an update to the story. And we had a substitute teacher, first grade, 5 and 6 year old kids, who is telling the kids that Santa isn't real. It's at this Montville Township public school. And anyway, so the teacher, first graders, you know, took it upon herself and, you know, says, well, no, Santa's not real. The Easter Bunny's not real. And the Tooth Fairy's not real. Elves are not real. Reindeer can't fly. I mean, just seemingly taking license to contradict the values of the parents. Now, we all know that's fake news. We know Santa Claus is alive. We know Santa Claus is real. And reindeer fly. And Rudolph exists. And elves exist. Anyone who reports anything else is fake news, right? Pastor Scott?
Yeah, listen, you're absolutely right. Those are things that need to be taught in the home. And that's a privilege that parents enjoy with their children, to bring them along in those stories the way they want to. This manger scene is simply political propaganda cloaked in pseudo-social spirituality. It was never mentioned during Obama's term. And, you know, with all of the other injustices and human rights violations that occur all over the world, it seems as if, especially this particular parish, they choose which one is the political hot topic of the day, especially if it makes this administration, if it reflects negatively on this administration. They choose which ones are the political hot topic of the day, and they try to make it some spiritual issue. Maybe I'm wrong for saying this, and I don't want to disrespect anybody, but they need to put up a display denouncing the pedophilia in the Catholic Church and ask, would Jesus accept that, rather than would Jesus accept illegal immigration? Because
Well, listen, I was raised a Catholic. I'll give you both some background. I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy. I went to Catholic schools for 12 years, the last four at a high school that was a prep seminary. And to get into the school, you said you would, you had to say that you would consider the priesthood. And my father made me do it. And I said, he really did. He was pushing hard. 3 weeks in, they pulled me aside. Everybody but you, we wouldn't want you. So I was disqualified 3 weeks into my 4-year education at the high school. But in all seriousness, to me, this is a church made rule because, and you guys know more than I do, Robert Jeffers, because weren't 11 of the 12 apostles married? And wasn't it okay for the first 1100 years of the Catholic Church for priests to marry? And all of a sudden they changed the rules and then probably knocked out 95% of potential eligible people that would maybe want to serve in that capacity.
Well, that's right. And of course, Peter, whom Catholics consider to be the first pope, the Bible talks about his wife. And so, I mean, the scripture is very clear. But, you know, I'm not here to Catholic bash, but, you know, speaking of immigration, I mean, the pope is all wet when it comes to immigration policy. And, Sean, there is this narrative by both Protestants and Catholics that says that somehow President Trump is unchristian for securing the borders. I mean, the fact is, look at the Bible. God is not an open borders kind of guy. I mean, he's the one, the Bible says, who established nations and borders. And President Trump is fulfilling his God-given responsibility in securing the borders and keeping citizens safe. That's what government is supposed to do, according to the scriptures.
See, I just know that there's still, like, for example, I think the Mass is a very beautiful reminder of the Last Supper. I think a lot of their prayers are great, but they have done such incredible damage because this scandal reached to the highest levels of power within the Catholic Church. And I don't know, Pastor Scott, if they ever get to recover from that. And listen, I can just say, I speak for myself as I just consider myself a non-denominational Christian. I believe in God, the Father, and Jesus, his son, and who came to save all of us from our sins. A lot more of mine than yours, probably. But, you know, and I believe the story. I believe it's true.
And that's Christianity. That's Christianity 101. Denominations, you know, and there's nothing wrong with denominations per se. It's simply a group of people that endeavor to come together and do a work for God. But we can take these things and we can distort them and we can cause them to fall away from their original purpose. Catholicism has a lot more problems to deal with that are a bad reflection on this nation and on the world and on the Catholic Church than illegal immigration and the caravan that is being used for political purposes. And once again, when they talk about Jesus not accepting it, no, he wouldn't. And you know one thing? Jesus never organized a rebellion or picket Caesar. He said, give Caesar his, give God his. He didn't promote...
Well, let me give you my shot at an interpretation of that, right? Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's, right? So...
Right. If
God is the creator of the heavens and the earth and all things visible, seen, and unseen, that would tell me that God owns everything and Caesar owns nothing. So what you render unto Caesar, Caesar doesn't own it, but God allows him to have it. That's a pretty good interpretation.
It is, Sean. And look, I mean, the Bible says God created government just like he created the church for a different reason. I mean, at our church, we don't check people's green card to see if they can come into our services or not. But, you know, the country is not a church. God created government.
Well, how come when I went to your church, I was patted down for like 25 minutes by your guys?
And by the way, you're going to come back after your sermon. We were ready to ordain you as a Baptist priest.
That's such a lie. That is such a lie. Pastor, you're not allowed to lie. Only we mere mortals can lie.
We're ready for you to come back.
Listen, I actually think that what bothers me is, like, I, for example, if I know somebody right now is celebrating Hanukkah, I always say Happy Hanukkah. You know, I ask people about what their family traditions are, how they celebrate the holiday. And same with people that I know of other faiths. I will, out of respect, but if I say to somebody I'm out shopping And you can't, yeah, it says big Christmas sale, but you can't say, if you work there in the store, you can't use the words Merry Christmas.
Well, fortunately, we have a president who's made that more in vogue to do again. And look, the fact is, you cannot deny the fact that whether you accept Jesus as the Messiah, no human has ever done more to influence the world than Jesus Christ. And that's something everybody can celebrate, Christian or non-Christian alike.
Yeah. What if either one of you
is under attack? Christianity is under attack all around the world and in America as well.
Yes.
You know, you're not allowed to say Merry Christmas, but they don't want to hamper any other religions from expressing their sentiments during their whatever their holy times are.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that why is there a resistance when you have all these public schools and you're in Cleveland, Pastor Scott, all these schools where our kids can't read and write, and you got teachers saying Santa doesn't exist to 5-year-olds and elves don't exist and reindeer don't fly? And I'm thinking, ought they not be focused on reading, writing, and math, considering we spend more per capita per student than any other industrialized country and have the worst results and the worst bang for our buck?
You're absolutely right. Do your job. Your job is to teach my child, not raise my child. It's my job to raise them. It's your job to teach them. And you teach them whatever the curriculum is, teach them reading, writing, arithmetic, whatever else. But when it comes to raising them and instilling in them the values and principles that our family subscribes to, that's not your job as a teacher. It's not your job to
Well, why do they think it's their job to instill values?
Erica, great hat on. You're not giving your political opinion.
Sean, it's because they have an agenda, and it's more than an educational agenda. They want to separate this nation from its Christian foundation. There is an agenda at work to do that. And look, the good news is it doesn't matter what you do. You cannot erase the impact Jesus Christ has had on this world. Every time we write the date 2018 on an email or on a check, we're acknowledging that it's been 2018 years since the most important event in human history, the coming of Jesus Christ. And no secularist, as hard as they try, can erase that fact.
But you know that a lot of them want to. I mean, a lot of them think that, you know, people forget, too, there were court rulings in the early 1960s back-to-back about prayer in school. There was even Bible reading in school, and I don't know what the fear was, but American public schools did not become a theocracy. But what's interesting is if you look at the worst problems for kids back in that era when there was religion taught in school, Christianity, Judeo-Christian principles taught, well, the biggest problems in school were talking in class, chewing gum, and running in the halls. And now it's evolved into, let's see, violence, guns, gangs, murders, rape, pregnancy. I mean, I think we've come a long way after we threw God out of the classroom. But we've come a long way in the wrong direction.
And this is something, Sean, that just happened in the last 70 years. These court rulings, for the first 150 years of our nation's history, Bible reading and prayer were not only allowed, they were encouraged. And I asked these pinheads from the ACLU when I debate them on Fox, what changed in the last 70 years? Did the Constitution change and somebody didn't tell us? No, we have allowed the secularists to hijack our Constitution and to pervert it into something the founding fathers never intended.
Yeah, Pastor, you want to respond, Pastor Scott?
Well, he's absolutely right. And respect for teachers and respect for society has eroded along with the elimination of Bible reading in school. Now they go to school and there's actual fear for your life inside of the classroom. Knives and guns have replaced Bibles in the schools, and it's a sad state of affairs. And then when we have a movement, or we have a president that at least acknowledges the fact that Christianity betters this country, there's a backlash against that. And that's part of the reason why the president receives the opposition that he does, is simply because he has endorsed Christianity unashamedly. If he didn't, he would not receive the backlash, but that's part of it right there.
What I think what is most interesting, maybe a lot of people wouldn't peg Donald Trump as, the most religious man in the world, but he's done the most for religion in the country and freedom of religion in the country and helped out people that are families of faith. And then you add to that Jerusalem, now the capital of Israel, which every other president promised and never delivered on.
Well, there's no doubt he is the most pro-life, pro-religious liberty, pro-conservative judiciary president we've ever had in history. And, you know, I tell people all the time, Sean, when they ask me about President Trump's faith and personally, and I say, look, he may not be exactly like us, but at least he likes us and doesn't hate us like Obama did. He hated conservative Christians, and President Trump has absolutely become the most faith-friendly president in history, no doubt about it.
As the head of the Diversity Coalition, do you see now, especially with the low unemployment numbers, when you break it down demographically, 14 states have record low unemployment, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment, our veterans now have the lowest unemployment in many decades. Is that going to result in more votes? Should that continue for the next 2 years for the president? Because under Obama, we had 13 million more Americans on food stamps. And 8 million more in poverty.
I had a conversation with the White House just yesterday about the messaging. I think we need to be a little more aggressive in our messaging, because if we're waiting on the liberal media to promote those facts, they're not going to do it. Even with this First Step Act and prison reform, but the media, we need to get, I think, a little more aggressive in our messaging about this. And it's going to translate into a lot more votes.
All right, Pastor Scott, thank you. Pastor Jeffers, thank you. Merry Christmas to both of you. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. All right, a Hannity investigation, huge, huge development, and how secret FBI email chain has been discovered, smoking gun evidence that could provide the most damning evidence yet of the FISA abuses in the Russian probe. And by the way, you're not allowed to believe in Santa. 9 Eastern tonight, Hannity, Fox News. We'll see you then back here tomorrow.